Now, around 13% of South African employees live with a diagnosed mental health condition. Globally, around 12 billion working days are lost each year due to anxiety and depression. So obviously, the human toll is serious. But so is the business impact. Employers are facing a growing challenge, how to support mental wellness while still enforcing performance standards. It's a legal and, I would contend, ethical balancing act. And recent case law has made it clear that neither employees nor employers can afford to get it wrong. So let's discuss this legal landscape. And I'm in conversation now with Aisha Kajika, who's an associate in the employment law practice at the law firm Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr. Aisha, a very warm welcome to you. Let's start with the scale of the issue, if we can. 13% of employees in South Africa living with a diagnosed mental health condition. I suspect that figure might even be higher. How well equipped are workplaces to deal with that reality right now?
Jeremy, thank you for having me. It's great to be here to talk about something that affects so many workplaces and how we support mental health while keeping performance on track. So as you said, mental health is not a fringe issue. And you know, so many people in South Africa live with a diagnosed mental health conditions, and globally we lose billions of working days each year to anxiety and depression, for example. And for businesses, that's productivity and people. But for the employees, it's dignity and fair treatment. And today it's about balancing both. So mental health issues don't automatically excuse poor performance, and poor performance doesn't automatically justify dismissal. The law expects compassion and structure, reasonable support first, and fair process always. So companies are equipped, and we're seeing a lot more case law about this. I mean, there was a recent labor court judgment called Abels versus the University of Stellenbosch, where the court upheld that a dismissal for poor performance, despite his depression being raised, the employee couldn't show a direct causal link, and the employer had documented reasonable accommodation. And that's what the law expects, that you can prove these things and that a balance is shown.
I want to come back to something you said right at the beginning of this conversation about it not being a fringe issue. Do you think that employers still tend to treat it that way, though?
To an extent, yes. But it is becoming a lot more prevalent nowadays. And there's been policies about this. So we do see it a lot more, and we see a lot more employers coming to us and asking us to draft policies relating to this.
Aisha, what does the law actually say then about an employer's duty to provide a mentally healthy work environment?
So it says that if you are dealing with a person that have these issues, you need to reasonably accommodate them. So you need to set clear targets and timelines, and you should always do these things in writing, and you should offer proportionate support such as training, mentoring, flexible hours, or adjusted workloads where feasible. You need to check in regularly, have scheduled reviews to keep everyone aligned and to avoid surprises. And you need to document everything, what you observed, what was agreed, what was tried, and the outcome. This record keeping was also decisive in the Abels versus the University of Stellenbosch case.
So Aisha, what about burden of disclosure then? What does an employee have to do in order to be treated fairly by a company? What information, what documentation do they need to provide?
So employees should offer a medical note or report that tries to link the condition to the specific work impacts, and plus practical suggestions for adjustments. So the clearer the link between the mental health issue and the impact on their work, the easier it is to tailor help to them.
So when can mental health then be used as a legitimate defense against poor performance claims? Where is the line here?
So if an employee can show that there is a direct causal link between mental health and their poor performance, then they can raise it.
But how do you prove that causal link? That often is a moving target, surely, and I suspect it could be very opaque.
It is, but they have to show that, for example, if they were unable to meet a specific deadline or a target, that it was directly because they were struggling mentally. They can't just say that, oh no, you know, they were depressed, but this happened afterwards. It needs to be directly. So if you see on the medical note that they were diagnosed with depression on the 21st of May, and you could see around that time they were struggling to meet all of their targets, then that shows that there is a link.
But at some point, Aisha, there's got to be a time when an employer can lawfully move from accommodation, as you've explained to me, to dismissal without facing legal risk. A legal minefield, I imagine, but how would an employer go around or go about doing that?
So when an employer can show that they've exhausted all revenues of avenues of trying to accommodate and reasonably accommodate this employee, then they can show that the dismissal is based on poor performance, because they've now gone through everything, they've documented everything, they've shown that they've tried to reasonably accommodate this employee, and they just can't.
So what rights would an employee have if it gets to that point, Aisha?
So if an employer is able to show that they've reasonably accommodated this person, that, you know, they've had discussions, they've adjusted their targets, their KPIs, the employee can't argue that. So an employee has rights when they can show that the employer hasn't tried to reasonably accommodate them. But this reasonably accommodation is within limits, correct? It can't be to the detriment of the business either. So you have to factor in all of that.
It can, I guess, become very complicated. But beyond the compliance, Aisha, that you've explained to us, I'm also going to suggest that there is a human and even a cultural dimension. And have you applied your mind to what a truly inclusive and tolerant work environment looks like in practice? Something that doesn't always exist, but something that I imagine companies need to strive for.
So absolutely. So I think the important thing to remember here is that we also need to show these employees empathy and understanding, you know, because they are going through a rough time. And I guess having an open relationship with superiors or HR, where you can go and speak to them and have these discussions, you know, and say, as an employee, I am really struggling. And from an employer perspective, to be receptive to receiving this, and you know, and just trying to understand one another and being open about it and showing each other empathy and sympathy and working towards the same goal, where you're trying to either reasonably accommodate this person. You don't want to dismiss them. That should always be a last resort. You are going to try and make it work, and you're going to try, because you understand that they're going through a difficult situation. So you're going to try your best from both sides to meet each other halfway and to get this right.
All about, I guess, building an organization based on respect and on tolerance. Doesn't always happen, though. Aisha Kajika, thank you very much indeed. Associate in the employment law practice at the law firm Cliff Dekker Hofmeyer. I do appreciate your time. Thank you.